Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Studio One Planner podcast. I hope you had a good Halloween, and we have a whole new set of rules to go over on student loans that just came out recently. And this is a very important episode. I'm just going to say that at the beginning, not because of anything in particular. It's just a lot of updates that really count and really, really are important to the people that they could benefit. So I want to start with like the different groups of people affected. Biden administration came out last week with details of the rules for the PSLF program moving forward after the PSLF waiver. This is 5 pages of information. We have to actually see the regulations before we actually can tell you definitively what it's all going to mean. But they put out some highlights that really are pretty earth-shaking for a lot of people. The first thing that jumps out to me is some of this stuff is for narrow groups of people, but it's life-changing if it applies to you. So the first group of people, Kaiser Permanente physicians. If you are a Kaiser Permanente physician, if you live in California or Texas, you probably work for a for-profit entity. And the reason is in California or Texas, there's a state law that basically says nonprofit hospitals are not able to directly employ physicians for whatever reason, probably to prevent physicians from being taken over by hospitals or something. There was probably a reason for it. But because of this nuance and this technical issue, all these physicians that are employed by Kaiser, which is a not-for-profit organization, do not qualify for PSLF because these physicians are employed through the for-profit physician group instead of directly through Kaiser. So what this new change in the PSLF rules does going forward is it says if you work for a qualifying institution, but you are the rules that said contractor, hopefully we'll get some clarification on that. But they said if your state rules do not allow you to work for a qualifying organization, then they're going to now give you credit for PSLF. That's a big freaking deal if you're a Kaiser Permanente physician. They specifically cited in the new program rules that they said, we know of many examples of physicians in California and Texas that we will work to have qualify for PSLF under these changes. This is really fascinating because this is pretty much a change that's being done for physicians, really. I can't think of that many other individuals that this affects, but it might actually benefit a broader group of people if they have a rule that comes back that says contractors that work at qualifying organizations could potentially qualify. What I think that they're going to do to get around the statute is they're going to say, or to creatively read the statute, I think they're going to say, you know, contractors, if you're forced to not qualify because of state laws, then you can potentially benefit that way. And in other words, I think that there might be some language that prohibits them from just straight up allowing contractors to access PSLF. But this is clearly an expansion that's primarily due to these California and Texas physicians. So if that applies to you, you definitely need to get a consult because it's a really big deal. It could take you from going for a paying off kind of scenario to going for forgiveness. And by the way, if you made any payments since March of 2020, you need to possibly look at getting all that refunded. There's a lot of different things you can do to look into, you know, is there a way to get your loans reinstated even? I mean, it's worth giving it a shot to see if you can't potentially get PSLF instead. So that's a really big deal. The other big changes that are a really big deal is something called hold harmless provisions. So what this says is you can essentially go back in time and basically make payments for periods that you were in a certain kinds of deferment or forbearance to get credit for forgiveness-based programs. So they specifically mentioned PSLF, and I think that's because the PSLF waiver is ending. That's why they wanted to release this, just to show how much they're doing for people going forward. And the deferment forbearance stuff, I'm not clear yet if that's backward-looking. I'm assuming it maybe could be. A lot of people are going to be getting credit for deferments and forbearance in any way under the IDR waiver. But so probably this is mostly affecting people on a look forward basis. But that's really interesting because effectively what it kind of allows people to do is sort of have the best of both worlds. If you make a mistake with your deferment or forbearance, don't worry about it as long as you're working at a qualifying employer. So this is really trying to change the program, the PSLF program. They're trying to move it from a program where you're supposed to be making payments to one where it's mostly where you're working at a qualifying employer at the time. Not entirely, because certain kinds of forbearance will not qualify, like discretionary forbearance, something that you ask for. That's not something that would necessarily qualify. But economic hardship deferment, certain kinds of administrative and mandatory forbearances or deferment would now qualify. So what it looks like to me, and we're going to have to do a lot more digging, and keep in mind these rules do not apply until July 1st, So there's no point in worrying about it until then, right? Because the rules have to be formally put into the Federal Register and they have to go into effect as of a certain date. So it goes into effect July 1st. Will there be scenarios where residents intentionally go into deferment or forbearance to pay nothing instead of paying $200 or $300 a month because they're positive they're going to be going for loan forgiveness? You might be weighing that option against signing up for Biden's new IDR plan, which has an interest subsidy that covers all of your interest above your monthly payments. Isn't that an interesting question? Would you rather pay $2,400 a year in residency, $200 a month, just throwing out a random example, or would you rather pay zero and have interest grow and accrue, right? So zero, if you're forbearance or deferment, that means interest is growing. If you are making payments under this new IBR plan that Biden might be coming out with here, then supposedly the interest would all be covered over and above your payment. So we're going to have all new kinds of decisions that people in residency and fellowship are going to have to make on maximizing their student loans. Again, these rules are not accessible to anybody on any level until July 2023, as far as we're aware. That's a really big change for people pursuing PSLF. The other really shocking part about the PSLF stuff is people are going to get a second shot at the PSLF waiver. So what they did, and this is really tricky and smart, if you're trying to extend help to people and trying to also stay under the radar, because, you know, frankly, the Biden administration strategy and all this is sort of like, we can do anything. We have no limits to our power as long as nobody sues us. I mean, that's really kind of what's going on, right? And for somebody to sue, we have to have standing. That's what we're learning in the lawsuit. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And so if somebody can't show standing, then there's no lawsuit and there's no way to stop what they're doing. So a future administration in some ways could roll back some of the things they're doing. So we'll talk about that a little bit later too. But it's very smart for them to do it this way because the PSLF waiver, if they just extended it, you probably would get some sort of lawsuit the way we saw the cancellation lawsuit, which is the FFEL commercially held, you know, loan investors would say you're providing an ongoing incentive to consolidate. We're going to sue to stop the whole PSLF waiver process and declare it unconstitutional. So instead of taking that risk, what they're saying quietly is we're going to have the IDR waiver offer a second option for people to get credit under kind of like for PSLF. So what the plan is, I think, is they're saying if you want credit under the IDR waiver, you got to consolidate old loans by May 1. Non-qualifying loans have to be consolidated by May 1 to have that account adjustment made. And they're going to make that account adjustment by July. That's what they're going to do. Supposedly is by July, they're going to make that adjustment. That is interesting because what they hinted at is if you're a public servant, then all of these prior payments before you made before consolidation, they can count those, they're claiming, because you know of the IDR waiver adjustment they're going to make in July. For example, if you missed the PSLF waiver, you could still consolidate in February 2023, still get access to it, and get your account updated come July with that change, which is really quite interesting. I don't know. That's very smart, sneaky, positive for borrowers, right? I mean, so the real concern is what happens if all this gets blocked? And now I want to talk a little bit about what I'm very concerned about. So now everyone that borrowed before 2010, I need you to listen up. So if you borrowed before 2010, and I hope I decided to release this episode on our normal schedule. So I hope that this doesn't happen before I say it, before this episode comes out, okay? But in the cancellation lawsuit for the Republican attorney generals that are going after they're going after cancellation, one of the things Department of Ed did was they blocked anyone with commercially held FFEL loans from accessing the cancellation that applied to consolidate on or after September 29th. Why did they do that? Because in the ruling that's claimed that the people opposing cancellation had no standing, Judge Autry, the judge that made the ruling, stated that because the plaintiffs cannot show an ongoing injury, which was an ongoing incentive to consolidate the FFEL loans, therefore, they didn't have standing, which means that if there was an ongoing incentive to consolidate the FFEL loans, that lawsuit could have resulted in an injunction for the whole program and maybe had the whole thing thrown out, which is why the Biden administration made FFEL borrowers not access the program if they consolidated on or after a certain date. So let's talk about the IDR waiver and why that matters. So the IDR waiver could have the exact same kind of movie play out. So what I'm real worried about is if you have loans from before 2010, there's a solid chance you have commercially held FFEL loans. The way you know you have this kind of loan is if you were asked to make payments on your loans during the pandemic. People with you know, Department of Ed owned FFEL loans were not asked to make payments. People with commercially held FFEL loans were asked to make payments. So if you have been asked to make payments during the pandemic, you have this kind of commercially held loan. If I was a gambling person, I would immediately consolidate all these loans together as fast as possible. And the reason is the second they come out with rules in the formal register, which is like the formal IDR waiver rules, right, which they'll do at some point soon. What happened in this cancellation lawsuit is this judge that said you don't have a case for cancellation basically said, if you provide an ongoing incentive to consolidate, that's grounds for stopping what you're doing. So what the Biden administration did under the cancellation is just block FFEL commercially held borrowers from getting any relief. And what they would probably do in the face of a lawsuit is they would do the exact same thing. And this lawsuit could be brought by anybody. It could be brought by pension funds. It could be brought, like, I think the state of Nebraska's pension fund is one of the parties that said that they were impaired. Their investments were impaired by the FFEL commercially held loan deal that they had invested in. This is something I'm majorly concerned about. I'm telling everyone on our team to tell all the people with old loans, just consolidate them. Like, yes, there's potential risks. You can't say there's no risks when you do something like this. It would be like, for those of you that are medical professionals, it'd be like you telling somebody, oh yeah, this surgery has zero risk. No, that's not true. Like, there's maybe some procedures that have an infinitesimally small risk, which is almost as low as zero, but there's no such thing as zero risk. So to say, like, for somebody who's like afraid of what to do, I can't tell you that there's no chance that you would be harmed by consolidation. You could be. If it was no chance you could be harmed by consolidation, probably we wouldn't have a consulting business because it would be that easy. Just, oh, go consolidate. But I will say that the vast majority of people that have loans from before 2010 should be mashing all their loans together in one new loan right now, especially people that are not going for the PSLF waiver, but they know they're going for forgiveness maybe in some other capacity. You should do this because I think it's going to get blocked in court. And the people that consolidated before the date that they announce will get it probably. And the people who apply to consolidate after the date that they announce the lawsuit probably will not. So I wanted you to tell you that so that I've got it off my chest, so that if anybody emails me after, if this does get blocked, I can say, I tried to help. I tried to get the word out. I tried to tell people. We're going to be putting this out in the newsletter too, just truly telling people, hey, if you're planning on getting the IDR waiver, don't wait. Don't wait. So I will say that again. If you have loans from before 2010, loans that did not have payments paused during the pandemic, if you have these FFEL loans, you need to consolidate them all. I would mash them all up with your direct loans. You know, just go for it. That would be my suggestion. Just go for it. It could make a really big difference in many cases. And if you're in this situation, we do have spots available, I believe, in like early November for consults. So I would book studentloanplanner.com/book. If you borrowed before, I'm going to say it as just as simple as I can. If you borrowed before 2010 for school and you still have loans, you need a consult immediately. I'm not being facetious or self-interested when I say that. Hopefully you can tell it's that important. You need to know what your options are. You need to know what the legal risks are. And you need to know that you might get cut off from aid and you would probably be really mad about that. So I just want you all to know, sorry if I'm kind of sounding like a, I don't know, Chicken Little, sky is falling. I'm not sure if that's the right analogy, but I just wanted to be super serious about that because that's a group of people that I'm pretty worried about. Because a lot of people that have had FFEL loans have had them for 20 years and might be only a couple of years away from getting the whole thing forgiven. The reason I think this is because Undersecretary Cavall, who's Department of Education Undersecretary, urged borrowers to apply for consolidation if they have non-qualifying loans by May 1, but then he said, but ideally do it before October 31st, if possible, do it as soon as you possibly can. Now that could be because of the PSLF waiver, I'll give him that, maybe that's the reason he was saying that, but I really think it's because the administration officials know full and well if a FFEL investor files a lawsuit, which I expect that they will once they release the information and the formal regulations, then they'll probably lose that and they'll have to carve out commercially held FFEL borrowers from the IDR waiver, which would be a big negative for a lot of people that have had loans for a long time. So ongoing incentive to consolidate, I didn't even know that that was the thing. In terms of legal concepts, but it is, and that's a major kind of open door for somebody that have standing to block student loan relief, and so that's why they keep ruthlessly cutting out certain small groups of people. I say small, there's millions of FFEL borrowers, but they cut off large groups of people to save the ship, so to speak. The ship is student loan relief, and you cut off one of the parts of the ship to keep the ship from sinking. That's what they're doing right now. So the cancellation lawsuit, let's talk about that briefly. The news might have already come out by the time this episode goes live. I'm not going to try to time this and make it super quick hit reaction newsy. We have an Instagram, like on Student Loan Planner. If you just type it on Instagram, Student Loan Planner, you'll find there. That's where I tend to do like quick hit reactions to things, the things that are like really news based. I'll tend to riff on that. So if you like to hear kind of like breaking news stuff, go there. I like to do the podcast more for just like deep analysis kind of things. And so the cancellation lawsuit is at the Eighth Circuit. So within a pretty short amount of time when we saw how they filed this lawsuit, talking with other student loan experts, this is how we make these discussions and kind of figure this stuff out, by the way. It's like, it's not just me like reading legal rules or something. I have lots of friends that have been doing this for several years like I have, and we love to exchange text messages and just like talk on the phone and try to learn about what other people are thinking about what's going on. And then one of my friends pointed out, like, I was like, well, if they filed this lawsuit in this Eastern District of Missouri, you know, who would they appeal it to if they fail? Because that's probably the plan, right? And he goes, oh, the Eighth Circuit. And I was like, well, I don't know anything about the law compared to my friend who's a lawyer. And I said, okay, let's just go on Wikipedia and look at the composition of this court of appeals. And it's 10 judges are appointed by Republican presidents, one judge appointed by a Democratic president. So if you were looking for the strategy to block student loan cancellation, this would be it. You find a court that, if you get a panel of judges, it's a very high probability that all of the judges on the panel would be appointed by Republican presidents. You know, you're getting one of the most conservative appeals courts in the country. If you get some sort of stay or injunction, that doesn't mean that it's a done deal that it's going to get blocked, but it certainly increases the odds. I'm not at all calling the judges partisans, because I don't think that's appropriate for me to do that, because judges are judges and judges have their opinions, and that's their right. They're the judges. I'm not. But I will say this. If you were, I'm not saying the judges are, okay? Just want to, I don't know what kind of consequences there are for saying anything bad about a judge, but I don't want to find out. So if you were a partisan judge, what would you want to do if you thought that a plaintiff did not have standing, but you also knew that if Republicans take the House, they will have standing to block this? Because Democrats sued President Trump over the border wall, and I think that that got stopped. I'm not totally sure, but that was like a House of Representatives versus Trump kind of lawsuit. I would assume that the same thing would happen if Republicans took the House on January 2nd, which is not too far away. It's only a couple months away. So if this got an injunction, even for a couple months, while they, you know, quote unquote, evaluate it, you could have an immediate lawsuit filed if Republicans take the House, and they could try to stop it that way. So that would be one thought. Is maybe the goal is just delay. If they come to a ruling blocking it completely, that would be pretty shocking if they did that very rapidly, but they could, and then that'll get appealed to the Supreme Court. And I think if they don't issue an injunction, it'll still get appealed to the Supreme Court. And it's hard to say if the Supreme Court would issue an emergency injunction before they start canceling debt. I don't know. Again, some of this stuff might sound kind of silly because maybe they've already made a bunch of decisions, but between the moment I recorded this and when this pod comes out, but that's okay. So the cancellation lawsuits, I think ultimately what's weird on both sides is Republicans are throwing out somewhat ridiculous arguments as to why they have standing to try to block this. They're saying that, you know, by canceling this now, they're being deprived of state income tax revenue at a later date because of the American Rescue Plan that made student loan forgiveness tax-free, but only until 2026. They have stated that they have standing because Missouri can sue on behalf of MOHELA, and all these things that maybe seem to be a bit of a stretch. And then Democrats are saying that they can cancel, most people are getting $20,000 for tens of millions of people because of a national emergency the president says is over, right? I mean, so both sides, I think it's fair to say, are operating from trying to win versus making some sort of, you know, nonpartisan appeal to logic that you might see on, like, you know, PBS or something like that from somebody. Doesn't matter, though. This is just all political stuff at this point, right? It's been really quite political, probably since, I'm going to say, and this might be controversial to say this, but I think it's probably, student loans have been extremely political since President Trump extended the payment and interest pause in September of 2020. I think that was very brazenly him trying to win re-election, and then President Biden extended it. I think initially because he thought that that was the right thing to do during a period where there were legitimately tons of high cases and lots of COVID deaths in early 2021 when he became president. But then I think in January 2022 when he extended it, I think that was a very clear case of it just being a completely political issue when the Build Back Better Act failed, right, to pass. And there was tons of Democratic anger, particularly from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party that really felt let down. And this was one of the levers the president had that he could pull to get relief to disproportionately Democratic voters, which is people with a college education, right? The long-term issues with all this stuff is this. If you do a bunch of things via executive action and not Congress, then a future president who is conservative, Republican, could come and trash all these changes and maybe reverse things. So the repay and the pay program, those are executive orders. I'm not 100% sure about this. I'm fairly certain that they would not be able to take those away from current borrowers. But what I would be fairly certain to say, almost for sure, is that a Republican president could come in and for anybody who takes out loans after January, let's just say July 2025. I'm just making up a date there, but let's say you had a new president. Actually, it'd probably be July 2026 because of the way you have to publish in the Federal Register the changes you want to make by November of the prior year when they take effect. So say, you know, a Republican president wins in 2024, you get installed in January 2025, you do a negotiated rulemaking, and then you get all the changes in place that you want to do. And so you publish those for public comment November 1, and then by November 1, and then you have that public comment period, and then they go into effect in July of that following year. So if you're doing all these things via executive order, via executive action, you're going to see a lot of confusion and probably some of these things rolled back at some point when a Republican president wins. So can you count on getting these benefits? I mean, if your loans are gone, that is the most convincing moment that I think that you are done. There's no way that it's going to get added back. Even though when a judge threw out one of the lawsuits against student loan cancellation, he said something that was kind of haunting, really, given that Halloween was recent. He said that if a president can cancel this much debt via executive action, then he basically posited the question, why can't a future president essentially tell borrowers that they have to make those payments again? In other words, unforgive it, which I thought that was kind of a scary thought. But I do think that no court is going to be able to tell servicers to reinstate debt just because that'd be a big lift, right? That'd be very complicated to do. Generally, courts don't like doing things that would be extremely complicated to actually do. But for future borrowers, I do think we're going to see a ton of policy volatility in the future. That's not going to affect your plan, so let's talk about that. Not going to affect your plan, not going to affect you going for forgiveness if you know that's the right call. Not going to affect you paying back your loans. Most Kaiser doctors that could benefit from PSLF already were going for 20-year forgiveness. At least that's our clients. There's some that refinanced and probably wish they could take it back. If you refinanced since March 2020, maybe that's a chance that you can. But if you refinanced, it's like, don't stress about it. Like my wife refinanced, she shouldn't have because she could have benefited from the PSLF waiver. Do I feel bad about it? No, because we didn't know the PSLF waiver was coming. We couldn't have predicted that. And if in our case, the right thing to do at the time was to get rid of it so it didn't stress us out anymore and so that didn't have to be in our lives. So we made the right decision at the time. Saying that, oh, I should never have refinanced or something, if only I had known. Well, sure, if only I had known that housing prices were going to fall this year, right? Or if only I had known that I should have bought a house before the pandemic instead of during the pandemic when prices were lower. Or if only I had known not to own international stocks the past 10 years, right? U.S. is just exceedingly outperformed. So there's all these things you can say shoulda, woulda, coulda. But at the end of the day, try to do the best you can. Maximize the rules to the extent you possibly can. And just make this a problem that you deal with, like your taxes, and then just live your life and focus on other things, right? Growing wealth. That's what we're really focusing on more and more in Student Loan Planners, just how do we help our audience grow wealth and just be excited about their financial future instead of feeling so burdened all the time by it. That's what, you know, we're going to talk about more in the new year. But for now, kind of to recap, lots of changes happening for PSLF borrowers, most of them good. the PS left waiver, you're going to get a second shot at this, but you do have to be working at a qualifying employer to get that second shot at it. Just so you know, Kaiser Permanente docs, book a consult with us because you might be able to get PS left now. Other people too, if you work for for-profit physician groups in California and Texas specifically, you need to at least examine this for sure. People who have loans from before 2010, consolidate because you might lose the opportunity due to legal challenges. And this cancellation lawsuit, don't stress about it because it's going to be what it's going to be. I think it's probably going to the Supreme Court at some point, and we'll just see what happens. I guess we'll probably have to do a big episode after the election based off what happens, who wins, because depending on who wins, I think we'll know a lot more about what student loan reform might look like in 2023. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Travis from Student Loan Planner. And if you need a consult, pre-2010 borrowers, people, their physicians in California and Texas, you can get that at studentloanplanner.com/book. Thank you and have a great week.